You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal. But everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hope you are having a really excellent Friday Eve. I've got a great guest co-host in the chair with me today. His name's Tom Paulswitz, two-time congressional candidate, Navy veteran, leadership coach, small business owner, and all-around reasonable guy. Thanks for being with Tom and I this afternoon. We've been talking about some pretty incredible news that's been breaking over this past half an hour or so about Pete Hegseth. Is this sound that we've got, is this Hegseth sound, Cal? Okay. And okay. So I wanted to be sure I had straight in my head what we had going on here. So no, I don't want to blow a minute and 50 seconds listening to Pete Hegseth melt down. Tom, I'm going to just go out on a limb here and make a wee bit of a prediction. I think Donald Trump is going to continue to support Pete Hegseth, but if these reports keep piling up, I think it's going to get harder and harder to defend. And like one morning we're going to wake up and Hegseth will be gone. Right. Old DJT will be like, boop, nope, you're done. Enough. Thank you. Over it. So let's talk.
I actually think there's a higher chance that he implodes before Trump gets rid of him.
You mean
that something happens? He says something so egregious that there'll be no choice but to remove him.
That's interesting.
I mean, at this point, I mean, if the pressure's already getting to him,
yes,
there is no pressure yet. So I think, you know, that's the path we're on. So we'll see what happens, though.
It's fascinating. Let's talk a little Ukraine, Tom. And folks, if you want to join Tom and I in a discussion this afternoon, because we're all about that real breaking news and great discussions at Civic Media, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Donald Trump, just earlier today, I can't believe I even have to say some of these things.
Yes.
Donald Trump earlier today said that, oh yeah, Russia's going to make concessions. Their concessions in this grand deal that he's striking are they'll stop the war and they won't take all of Ukraine.
Right. Not all of it.
What?
The huge concession by the Russians. Huge concession.
This is ridiculous. So yes. I just want to distill for everyone this. Here's what Ukraine is going to get air quotes here, get in this wonderful deal that Donald Trump has negotiated.
Right.
A quote, robust security guarantee.
That's not a guarantee.
That's not a guarantee at all.
Right.
It's totally vague. And there's no mention of any U.S. participation in said peacekeeping. And on the flip side, guess what Russia gets? Ukraine can never join NATO. So the very organization that would provide a robust security guarantee, they can never join. Right. And it's, you know, just a little vague promise. They'll get Ukraine would get a small part of Kharkiv. Not the whole thing, just a small part of the territory that Russia took. They'll get unimpeded passage to the Dnieper River, which runs along the front line in parts of southern Ukraine. Again, this was sovereign Ukrainian territory before Russia invaded.
Yes.
Vague notions of compensation and assistance for rebuilding, though this two-page document, very detailed, these Trump negotiators, this two-page document says not a whit about where said funding will come from.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm sure that'll sort out. Oh, of course, there has to be the U.S.-Ukraine minerals deal, so they got to give us their minerals. They will get to keep, because it was in Ukrainian territory, this nuclear power plant, but it's going to be operated by the United States, and they're going to provide energy to the U.S. and Russia.
Right. And they'll have to pay for their own electricity. Thank
right.
you very much.
Yes. That's fabulous.
Because we have to recoup. We have to recoup our costs somehow.
And on the flip side, Russia gets to keep control of Crimea permanently. Russia gets to keep nearly all of the Luhansk Oblast and the occupied portions of three major regions of Ukraine. Again, yep. Ukraine can never join NATO. Oh, no more sanctions. Those will be gone. And they get enhanced economic cooperation with the United States, particularly in the energy and industrial sectors. So to summarize, folks, here's what Ukraine gets. Here's what Russia gets. Everything they've always wanted.
And wait, what does Russia give up in this transaction?
These are all Maggie Dawn invented sound cues. Not off a production board. I'll just do them on the air with everybody. Like, here's what Russia gives up. Nothing.
Right. Nothing.
That's nothing.
Nothing. They give up the ability to take over the rest of Ukraine.
Unbelievable. Yes. I think we've got some audio of Trump saying this. Do we not have this audio? Let's take a listen. This reporter says, what concessions is Russia going to make? Let's listen.
What concessions, Mr. President, and to your national security team, what concessions has Russia offered up thus far to get to the point where you're closer to peace?
Stopping the war, stopping taking the whole country, pretty big concession.
Did you hear the laughter?
Yes!
There was actual laughter in that room.
Chuckling!
Because it's so absurd. Now, who knew stopping a war was difficult?
Harder than a real estate deal that you close with someone else's money that you'll never pay back and just, you know, bankrupt that and never pay a contractor.
Who knew?
A little bit
who
harder.
Who knew it was going to be complicated?
Than
who
a
knew?
Casino in Atlantic City. Just a week, you know, running racially discriminatory rental practices.
Right.
You know, and extracting value from working class New Yorkers. Little harder than doing that, Donald.
And we talked about this before, right? Donald Trump is so transactional that anything that takes longer than a minute to work through, he loses interest, moves on, and just assumes that people know what they're doing, you know? And he actually told Marco Rubio, we're moving on, right? Like it's possible just to move on to the next transaction.
Well, this is the thing. Like,
it's insane.
Underlying all this, and that clip, Marco Rubio is sitting immediately to the president's left. Who are you, Marco? How does that man sleep at night? We know Donald Trump has, I don't want to say has no soul. The man feels no guilt. He's never asked the Lord
no guilt
for
or
forgiveness.
Shame,
right? No guilt, no shame. I can say because he said so. He was asked, have you ever asked God for forgiveness? Answer, no, I don't do that. I just do what I do, basically was the answer.
Right.
So he feels no shame, no guilt, no remorse, doesn't reflect on whether or not any of this is actually going to work. Marco Rubio has never said or done any of the things that he's doing now in his entire career. Sellout,
right.
Not little Marco. What's a good Marco the sellout? I mean, Faust.
As a senator, wasn't he involved in a bill that made sure that Russia could not take over or be awarded the area they're being awarded now? He was key. He was instrumental in the passage of that bill.
Yes.
And here he is now going,
just give them everything they want. It's fine.
3 years later.
Now listen to this. This is how little Marco characterizes his complete abandonment of all of the values and things he held sacred for all of his 40 plus years on this planet. His defense of Ukraine for decades. His entire foreign policy worldview as a United States senator is now reduced to give Russia everything it wants because Trump says so. And this, Calvin?
Both very much looking to make a deal. Marco, what would you say?
Well, first of all, the what was put before our partners was options to discuss about things that it would take to end a war. This war is endable. Both sides just have to agree to it. We've shown them a pathway forward. We've discussed those ideas. There was a good meeting yesterday. There'll be good meetings over the weekend. We've shown them the finish line. We need both of them to say yes. But what happened last night with those missile strikes should remind everybody of why this war needs to end. It's horrible those missiles landed. What's even worse is there are today people that were alive yesterday that are not alive today because this war continues. And the president wants to stop it. And everyone should be thanking the president for being a peacemaker and trying to save lives. That's what we're trying to do here. It's not our war. We didn't start it, as you know. But we're trying to end the dying. We're trying to end the destruction. And we've shown the path forward. We can see the finish line, but both of them have to get there. We're going to do everything we can to help them get there, but they have to ultimately say yes.
Both. And we are using a lot of pressure on both. You know, if you think we're just in there because we're nice people, and we are nice people, but we're using a lot of pressure on both.
We're using a lot of pressure. We're nice people. I'm nice people. Little Marco, he's little, but he's nice. What? It's incoherent nonsense. What did Marco Rubio just say? War bad, peace good. Do what we say. Screw you, Ukraine. I mean,
there were missiles. Not saying it was the Russian missiles targeted against Ukrainian civilians. That's not what he said. He said, "Well, there's missiles. It's war.
That's bad. War bad, peace good." Screw you, Ukraine. Well, that's the cliff notes on what Marco Rubio just said in the Oval Office.
And the pressure they're putting on Russia was Donald Trump posting on Truth Social for them to stop it.
Yes, a two-line Truth Social post earlier this morning, the day before yesterday, about 25 lines telling Zelensky that he needs to do what the hell Donald Trump is telling him to do. Two lines for Russia, 25 lines telling Zelensky he's a bad guy. By the way, here are the facts on some of these negotiations. Let's see here. Steve Witkoff, Trump's envoy, has been meeting with Putin, fourth meeting with Putin, hasn't met with Zelensky in the last couple of weeks. Met with Putin for more than 4 hours last week. Do you think Putin just handed him his grocery list for Ukraine? Hey, here, Witkoff, give this to little Marco and then the orange man, because we've got the Comprobot. Here's my list of stuff that I'd like.
Well, when you're a real estate developer, you go where the money is, right? So, you know, it's not surprising they're going to the person who's going, who can give us the most back?
I mean, who's going to finance the hotels in Gaza? Tom, maybe the oligarchs out of Russia or the oligarchs here. We got Elon Musk still bopping around. Tesla stock down a resounding 72%. Maybe Elon slinking away. Don't be confused, everybody. Will continue.
Profit down 71%. Yes. Stock is holding in there for some bizarre reason. I don't know.
And I haven't even gotten to the meme coin. Haven't even mentioned the grift of all grifts. The pay-to-play is not even hidden anymore. Out in the open, top 220 donors to Donald Trump's pocket get a private dinner. We'll just put it through this thing called a meme coin, which isn't even really legit cryptocurrency. It's just a token. Just a fun
8 million
thing.
8 million from overseas today. $8 million.
And the Chinese guy that seeded the first like 20 million so that they could trade it.
Yeah.
And did I mention that the FCC has said that the meme coins aren't regulatable by the FTC? Yeah, that's beyond the FTC's scope. Yeah. This isn't corruption. It's totally above board. When we come back. Yeah, business, baby, business. When we come back, we're going to be joined by my good friend, Pete Konotek. We're going to talk about what a climate-safe pension is and why that should be important to every Wisconsinite. Billions invested by WRS. Can they go to things that aren't big oil? We discuss next right here in the
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I'm not Cecilia. I'm Maggie. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Thursday, everybody. And happy Earth Week, Earth Month.
Yes.
here in Wisconsin, I like to think of us as having a proud tradition of deep, almost reverent respect for our natural resources. Every single person I know, whether it's a family living in the downtown Milwaukee area or my uncle living in northern Wisconsin, who's an avid hunter and fisherman, everybody I know in the state of Wisconsin enjoys recreating in some way, shape, or form in the out of doors. And boy, is that good for the soul. And so don't we all have a collective responsibility to make sure that these beautiful natural resources that we've enjoyed for our entire lives are there for our kids and grandkids? My next guest, his name is Pete Knotek. He's with Climate Safe Pensions, and he's here. It is wonky, folks, but it is important wonk. Want to welcome Pete to the show. I've got a co-host with me. You'll hear him in your headphones, Pete. Tom Paulswitz, this fine afternoon. Welcome back to the show, Pete. You were with me last year during Earth Week. Tell us, what is your organization about and why is this important?
Well, I'm really happy to be back, Maggie. Climate Safe Pensions for Wisconsin is made up mostly of Wisconsin Retirement System participants. And we're calling on the State of Wisconsin Investment Board to divest our pension savings from financially risky and environmentally irresponsible fossil fuel investments. So they manage about $162 billion in total assets. But I'm concerned, and we're concerned about climate change and the $6 billion of SWIB investments that's in fossil fuel-related holdings. But it's crucial to understand that the risk is not just about fossil fuel companies. The broader understanding is that it's about climate finance risk.
That's great. And I just want to emphasize a couple of things there. First of all, Pete, you are and have been a public servant. You have served the people of Wisconsin. So I just want to start out by saying Climate Safe Pensions of Wisconsin are a group of the real public servants. And so I want to say thank you to you and all of your colleagues that have served us as Wisconsin residents. Folks, these are the people that make government work and work very well for you. And you mentioned SWIB, which is the State of Wisconsin Investment Board. The State of Wisconsin Investment Board is the specific entity that is charged with making the investment decisions. In other words, where does your money, the pensioners' money for the State of Wisconsin Public Employees Pension Fund, referred to also as the Wisconsin Retirement System, where do they invest that $162 billion? And right now, Pete, if I understood what you're saying, $6 billion of that is in big oil.
Yeah, that's right. But it's a slightly more complicated situation. And we're happy that over the last year, since I was last on the show, we've managed to get a little bit more attention of SWIB. We're happy that over 1,000 people, mostly WRS participants, have signed our online petition at Wisconsin, climatesafepensionswisconsin.org. And in addition to that, we've encouraged people to write to SWIB in their public comment apparatus at their website. Over the last year, 90% of the comments have been asking them to do something better about climate change and finance risk.
I think that's so critically important. And then I'm going to toss it to you, Tom, but I want to make this observation, and I want people to clock in what we're talking about here. So $6 billion are being invested on behalf of retirees and future retirees that are public servants in the state of Wisconsin. Big oil, going back to the 60s and 70s and 80s, had internal studies that predicted with absolutely breathtaking accuracy, rising sea levels, the amount of air pollution, pick the thing. They knew what fossil fuels would do to the environment. And they knew it with, again, breathtaking accuracy. They lied to the public. They lied to Congress, just like Big Tobacco did. And as a result, taxpayers in places like Wisconsin are going to have to outlay billions of dollars. These are effectively corporate subsidies that will go to help shoring up our infrastructure, remediating floods, all of the. So we're underwriting, we're passing subsidies to big oil while they reap, again, windfall profits, bigger profit margins than they have in decades, big both in percentage and in absolute dollars. Pete, you want people to sign this petition. You can find it at climatesafepensionswisconsin.org. You want SWIB to divest from big oil. Is that the objective here?
It's a little broader than that now, Maggie.
Tell us.
And it has to do with is growing an understanding around climate finance risk. And that is readily apparent in areas such as banking, government, insurance, mortgages, and real estate. And SWIB has not addressed our specific questions about their plan to address the risks that are much broader than just fossil fuel-related holdings. They have holdings in insurance companies and in banking. And so,
meaning the industries that help support big oil and fossil fuels.
And the whole economy.
Yes.
Because when you look at what happens with the big storms that are happening with the urban and wildfires.
Yes.
Those result in devastating losses. Look at California. They just had massive urban fires. That is what transitions from a wildfire. So thousands of homeowners there are either uninsured or underinsured. And so what that results in is people without mortgages, then they can't have proper insurance, and you have climate-induced credit crunch.
Yes. Incredibly fascinating topic. Folks, you can find out more. You can sign that petition at climatesafepensionswisconsin.org. Can't wait to talk to you again, Pete. Let's do that. We'll dig in more about the connectivity in our economy to fossil fuels and the risk that it poses to taxpayers and the entire economy more soon. We'll get you signed up to do that, Pete. Keep it locked. We're going to talk about taxing the rich, the threat of Donald Trump's terror tariffs here in Wisconsin in your family's pocketbook with a very special guest when we come back next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Talking about tax policy this beautiful Thursday afternoon. I know I do. We've got just the most fabulous guest to do that with each of us this afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got Tom Polsiewicz with me in the guest co-host chair, and we've got a fantastic new guest to bring on with us. His name is Indy Duttagupta. He is the Doris Duke Distinguished Fellow at Georgetown University, formerly a House Ways and Means Committee staffer, has worked for the Center for American Progress and the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, excuse me. And he just published two papers that you can find at the Roosevelt Institute on the care economy and tax policy. Indy, thank you so much for making time and coming to talk about what I call Donald Trump's tariff terror that is going to tax the hell out of the middle class and working people, especially right here in Wisconsin. I heard commentary today on, I believe it was Wisconsin Public Radio, saying that a state like Wisconsin is going to be hit especially hard by Donald Trump's tariff policies. Can you help us understand why we're particularly vulnerable here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, look, Wisconsin, well, first of all, Maggie and Tom as well, it's great to be here with you all talking about these issues and what it means for regular people, because that's really what matters here. And you think about a state like Wisconsin and, you know, it's not just a sort of stereotype. The reality is there's a lot of agriculture, a lot of dairy agriculture, manufacturing, construction, and these are industries that are highly dependent on both selling our goods elsewhere and inputs into making things that come from abroad. Because over the last few decades, we've created a very sort of internationally interdependent economy. So folks in Wisconsin will absolutely feel things like job loss in the local communities, higher prices. I've heard from folks who farm in dairy, for example, and say with the deportation too, which, you know, is a real risk here in undermining the economy, that they won't be able to produce milk and cheese.
Yeah, it's just shocking the scope of impacts that we are anticipating here in Wisconsin. And Indy, I wanted to ask you this. I do not understand how we can function as an economy, how regular people can live in a state that is not existential economic fear when we have a stock market that is up and down like a yo-yo based upon our fearless leaders' moods. One day tariffs, yes. Next day tariffs, no. Market goes up and down. It all seems to read, again, basically Trump's moods. He criticizes the heck out of the Federal Reserve Chair, Jerome Powell, right? Market goes down. Next day, he gets reined in a little bit, maybe softens that, but market goes back up. This is not the way things are supposed to be. And the uncertainty about tariffs is going to make it very hard for businesses here in Wisconsin to decide whether to hire more people, whether to expand, whether to continue to produce what they're producing, whether to stockpile inputs needed in their supply chain. Can we continue like this? Is this workable?
No, this is absolutely undermining the basic living standards of Americans going forward. So on the one hand, we're feeling this anxiety. And some people, say, for example, who are near retirement, are really in a tough position and may have to accept just lower incomes during retirement because of their investments, which were thought to be relatively safe in U.S.-based companies, no longer being so safe. And then on the other hand, you've got even small businesses who might depend on partners in Canada or partners in Mexico. And, you know, there's a lot we can do to strengthen U.S. trade policy, but probably putting someone with such unilateral sort of power at the helm of it isn't a great idea for anyone. And in the long run, people need some predictability. How do you build a business? Like, say you're just, you know, someone working on their own, selling things online on Etsy or something. Well, you know, maybe you were buying let's say you were buying pieces of metal from China or somewhere. Is it essential that the U.S. also make that? I think the other thing that folks don't understand is we export a lot of things to the rest of the world, including services. So
services, yeah.
The University of Wisconsin-Madison is a great example, right? So education is a major export of the United States of America. And we are taking one of our greatest economic strengths, and UW-Madison is just one example. There's others in Wisconsin. But we're taking one of our greatest economic strengths here, and we're undermining it. We're making it hostile for people to come to, from other countries especially, to do important work like cancer research. It's completely wild. I couldn't imagine a better set of arguments for not concentrating so much power in one president, in any president.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the other thing I've been thinking about is, you know, I work with a bunch of small business owners, and the uncertainty of what's happening in the economy is holding it. It's really causing people to basically be paralyzed when it comes to making money decisions. So investing in new plants, investing in new equipment, hiring people, all sorts of things. I just find there's this constant waiting going on right now. So there's the hard dollar cost of tariffs and everything else, but there's this soft thing that's causing the economy just to slow. And I don't see anything coming out of the Trump administration even recognizing it or having a plan to do something about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Tom. Well, first of all, that's exactly right. It's a rational behavior for small businesses to look around and figure out what can I predictably take a risk on and take a reasonable risk on. Where should I invest? Should I partner with this firm? Should I expand in this way or that way? We need stability for that. That's partly why you saw Maggie brought up the attacks on the chair of the Federal Reserve, because that undermines stability. And actually, when you have some stable financial systems and markets and some predictability, people can do great things. But when you don't, it's the completely rational thing to do to be paralyzed, like you said, Tom. Do I see anything from the administration that might mitigate this? Well, I guess once in a while, the right person catches the right person's attention at the right moment. And that is just a terrible way to run an economy and to run economic policy.
Right.
Well, and Indy, you mentioned the right person happens to catch the president's ear. We know, you know, Scott Bessent has been speaking up, raising all kinds of concerns. But you got Peter Navarro talking in his other ear like, oh, yeah, tariffs are the solution. They have not worked well in the United States past, despite the president's selective memory on that. In fact, helped exacerbate the Great Depression. And we had to have literally the CEOs of, what was it, Target, Walmart, two other major retailers in the Oval Office saying, there's going to be a run on our products and store shelves will be bare. Do you want pictures of people in literal bread lines under your administration? And then he relents on the reciprocal tariffs. I want people to realize, and Indy, please correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't yet begun to feel the actual impact of the trade war with China, which just today, which is a tariff war, that's what we mean when we say trade war, 145% tariffs from the U.S. on Chinese imports, China at 125%. Trump and Bessent indicating yesterday, oh, yes, we've got these robust negotiations going on. China puts out a statement today, no, there's zero negotiations going on. We haven't begun to yet feel the pain of that particular, what I'm going to call, brinksmanship. There's no movement. How do they get out of this? And we haven't, again, even felt the pain point yet.
Well, some of us as consumers maybe haven't, but again, if you think about what Tom just laid out about how paralyzed some small businesses feel, you've got a business that makes board games that's bringing forth a legal suit against the Trump administration. You know, this is another really important point. Maggie, you brought up CEOs of major profitable companies having the president's ear. Well, what about somebody who makes board games? What about somebody who runs a bed and breakfast, a B&B, somewhere near the Canadian-U.S. border, right? So this is also just a complete recipe for corruption, for favoritism, for cutting deals left and right. And what here is even the strategy? You can imagine some role. There's always been some tariffs here and there, and it can help when another country's violating environmental protections or labor protections. But what's the strategy here? We're going to exempt electronics from China, which would be advanced manufacturing, potentially decent jobs, and encourage Americans to start making sneakers?
Yes.
Who is asking for this? Who voted for that?
It's so utterly confusing. And thank you so much, Indy, for bringing up the corruption. This is access economics, which is a fancy cleaned up way of saying it's favor trading. Those that have the president's ear, who have donated to him. We've got reports on the $250 million inauguration. Those are the people who he listens to. With the meme coin happening, the potential for people literally to pay to play, to have exemptions for their business to get out of the trade war so that they can continue business is at the highest it has potentially been in literally 100 years in American history. What should we be doing? What should the regular person, all the folks listening right now, Indy, what should we do?
Well, look, let's remember, first of all, that the president isn't all that popular. So there's a lot of scary things happening, especially for immigrants, but also just folks who are in higher ed institutions or work on the climate environment. But we still have a voice and people still have the ability to influence both what their members of Congress and senators do, but also, you know, at the state level, right? States can be a bulwark here to both protect our economy and our democracy. And I think the less popular the president is, the more likely that others will kind of, you know, go against his wishes. There are people, like we had a Republican senator from Alaska say she was afraid to speak up against the president, and others are too. That's a terrifying thing to say in a democracy, right? But the less popular he is, and the more the people are very clear about its tangible harms that they're experiencing, we haven't even gotten to the forthcoming cuts to Medicaid, SNAP,
right.
Potentially housing assistance, childcare, and the like. But we still have a chance to put some of the worst possibilities out of play. We've prevailed here and there, for example, on Social Security administration when Musk and the Doge team tried to cut phone service, mm-hmm. which people, especially yep. in rural areas, really depend on.
Folks, that is Indy Duttagupta. He is the Doris Duke Distinguished Fellow at Georgetown University in the McCourt School of Public Policy. You can find two of his most recent research papers at the website, I want to get this exactly correct, RooseveltInstitute.org, on the care economy and tax policy. Remember this whole tariff thing? Yeah, that's just a way to make working people and the middle class pay way more than our fair share. Tax the rich, y'all. We'll be back in just a moment right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network for some final thoughts. Thank you, Indy. Keep up the good work.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Do not get caught in the crossfire unless you are a brave, brave soul. Ladies and gentlemen, we're on the last segment of the day. My, how time flies when we're having a great conversation. Thanks so much to my guest co-host today, Tom Paulswitz, with me for the whole 2 hours. I'll be back tomorrow. We got Pete Schwabba coming up. I almost said Pete Hegseth because we were talking about him so much today. We got Pete Schwabba coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. For a little nightlight, you're going to want to stick around and ease into your Thursday afternoon and Friday eve. Just in case you were keeping score, and we're going to talk about two different kinds of scores, Donald Trump chalking up three big losses today in federal courts. Yes. Three separate federal judges today putting on hold his bogus executive order on DEI, on sanctuary cities, and this crazy thing to muck about in our election system. Some nonsense, unnecessariness about voter registration, all put on hold.
Who knew they were going to be illegal? Who could have thought?
It's like, who knew Pete Hegseth was going to be terrible? Who knew?
Right. Who knew?
90% of Donald Trump's executive orders are unconstitutional.
Right.
Most of us did. And this score, I'm sad to report the Brewers dropping one to the Giants today in a heartbreaker of a game. Final score on that game, 6-5. Oh, so very
they may have, sad. You know, they've always had such a great bullpen. They may have a bullpen problem right now. So we'll see what they can do over the next couple of weeks to work that out.
It also is not helpful when our dearest Christian Yelich dropped a fly ball in the eighth. Ouch. Guess who is at bat? Adamas, Willie Adamas, now playing with the Giants, traded in the offseason, or I should say not signed.
Did he do it on purpose? I don't know.
Now, I have been talking to a bunch of my friends, speaking of sports. A goodly number of people heading up to Green Bay to get in on the NFL draft action. Are you watching this closely, Tom? Are you interested?
Oh yeah, I'll be watching tonight. I always watch the draft. You know, it's the weirdest thing though. It's one of the few places left where, you know, as an employee, you don't have a say on where you can go to work, and it's all legal. It's all legal at this point. At some point, that's going to have to come up, but. Anyways, the draft is tonight. Green Bay's rocking and rolling. We talked to I can't remember his name. Who was the gentleman we had on last week? The PR person from the Packers. He was fantastic.
Yes. Brian Reinsinger.
Yeah, they did so much to get ready and get everything put together. And I you know, I love Green Bay, and I hope the rest of the country falls in love with it too tonight. So that'd be fantastic.
When we had that conversation, and I often joke that America's team ain't the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones with the world's biggest jumbotron. It is the fan-owned Green Bay Packers, smallest town with any professional sports franchise in the United States, anticipating tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions in economic activity in the Green Bayland area. So do you have a fantasy team, Tom?
Football, no. I stopped playing fantasy football a long time ago. I play fantasy baseball, though. I tend to enjoy that more.
Which requires daily care and feeding. I figured I did a fantasy baseball league last year and came in dead last because I was like, I can't trade people every day.
Football, I just like to enjoy the game. You know, I get worked up while watching a Packer game. So I like to watch another game and not be emotionally invested in it. But that's me. So
I have a big group of guy buddies that I hang out with on occasion, and they're all in the same, all of us from law school together. And these nerds show up at a bar with their big binder, like they have binders for the draft as if they're actual owners or GMs. I find it hilarious. So I might be quaffing a couple bevvies with my buds tonight, watching
flip through their binders. One of my most prized possessions is my rejection letter from Bob Harlan. When I applied for the position of salary cap person with the Packers back in 1999. So he actually typed out a letter, signed it, and sent it to me. So
I've kept a couple of choice rejection letters myself, Tom, just because, you know, the trip down memory lane is pretty fun. Eric from Madison on the text line provides a correction to me. Maggie, America's team is neither the Dallas Cowboys nor the Green Bay Packers. It is the Detroit Rock City Lions. Listen, if I can't pick the Packers, Eric, my man, I would be rooting for them. Detroit Rock City Lions. I love me some Detroit. For real, though. Absolutely fabulous city. Love hanging out there. I'm in Michigan with some degree of regularity. I really love the city. I have a couple friends from the Grand Rapids area. And one of my favorite sports memories, not favorite, but like indelible, perhaps, sports memory. Do you remember Chris Webber in the magical timeout after he traveled on the other end of the court? Big Michigan in the NCAA
final. The look on
final.
His face. Like,
yes.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh. Yep.
Can't believe I did that.
Yeah. Absolutely memorable. How long ago was that? That was with Grant
90s,
Hill, right?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. They're all retired now. Yes.
We're dating ourselves. sports memories. You do tend to, they do seal into the mind's eye.
Yes, they do.
So sad, Brew Crew. And I don't have baseball to watch tonight. I'll be watching the draft with my buddies and some bevvies. Yes. Get out there and enjoy the beautiful
Packers
weather.
Will be picking around 9:50 if you're that much of a geek.
I'll be about
it,
two bevvies in, 9:50. Perfect timing.
There you go.
Listen, take care, everybody. Thanks so much, Tom P. He'll be back with me on Monday. Remember,
Monday.
I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for our Packers, Bucks, and crew.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.